It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
I can't think of a better way to spend a Sunday afternoon than going out visiting farms. I've had a chance to do that just recently, and visiting farms on a beautiful fall afternoon. And today we're going to talk to some of the farmers that I visited, talk about why they love what they're doing. We're sitting outside in a park right now, and I'm going to talk to one of the people that organized the tour. We're going to explore what it takes to put something like this on and what happens when you have a tour of visiting farmers. And my guest is aptly named because it's Ellen Farmer. And so I can't think of a better name for somebody to be on Farm to Table Talk. Ellen, welcome.
Thank you very much.
So, Ellen, other than explaining your name, Farmer, I'm going to have you explain what has gotten you involved in wanting to participate in putting something like this together for the public to meet farmers.
Okay, well, I have a deep regard for family farms. That is something that's been my whole life. My grandparents had a dairy farm that we would visit, and I've got involved with coordinating this with the woman whose brainchild the whole thing was. Her name is Penny Ellis. She started it herself, and I went last year, and I was completely mesmerized by what a fabulous event it was, but I felt like they needed more volunteers. So I volunteered to bring volunteers and help her organize it.
And so you pick a date and you start lining up farms. And I think you had, was it 10 farms?
It was 10 farms, yes. And they've been similar, like 8 farms were there last year, but we had 2 new ones this year. And we have lots of ideas about expanding it.
Well, the whole thing had a center. You had actually, you had the grounds of a nursery that allowed you to set up food tents and so forth, and people could come there, and that was sort of the hub for it.
Yes.
And sign up and then have a map to go drive to the various farms, right?
Yes, it was totally self-directed, and the hub was fantastic because Gustavo, who's the owner of Aladdin Nursery, where we had that, really cares about this kind of thing. He cares about the community. He wants people coming in. He loves having people there. It's not just about selling plants for him. It's about building community. He was serving wine and had a jazz band and people were dancing. And so for him, the occasion is social as well as educational.
How did you pick out the 10 farms that would be on the tour?
You know, I have to say that Penny did all of that one farm at a time, just getting to know the farmers.
So when the farmer says, okay, we'll do that, so they're allowing people to come onto their farm, they have to make arrangements to have parking or direct people mm-hmm. to where they can park, and then answer questions and give tours at each of the farms.
Yeah.
Sometimes they would have a table up with information or have some of their products out on display or for sale.
Mm-hmm. Most of them are farmers market farmers, so they are really accustomed to setting up a table and having sales. And some of them used to be farmers market farmers, and now they do wholesale, say flowers to the San Francisco Flower Mart or something. But they definitely love having the public come by, and they know it's a really important part of basically marketing your farm business. You have to do a lot of things to get people's attention.
So you found a base of operation that where mm-hmm. everything was going to start and have some activities going on there. You get the farmers lined up. You have the date lined up. You have the maps and of how the whole thing is going to go. How mm-hmm. do you promote attendance? How did you get people to come to it?
Well, that's a really good question because we promote it as a free event. And that way families can come, you can bring grandma, you don't have to worry about the price of admission. And then we ask people for donations. So we have an online registration process where people can just register for free or they can decide to donate. It doesn't matter. We just want to kind of get a prediction of the numbers. And then we also have, because it's free, it's really easy for newspapers and magazines to write an article about it because they know that we're not trying to make a big profit off of this. We just want to promote a free event that people can go to. So we got very good coverage in the newspapers, radio, Edible Monterey Bay, which has a wonderful weekly e-newsletter. So that was going out, and and then word of mouth from last year, I think. But the best way is all the farmers who go to the farmers markets had little flyers and postcards. And this was farmers markets all over the Bay Area. We had visitors from Palo Alto, Sunnyvale, all over Santa Cruz and Watsonville. You know, all the different markets had people coming. So.
Well, I overheard a few people there that were from outside of the United States that were making some trips in and wanting to take in what agriculture was like in the United States and visiting the farms too.
Yes, I absolutely felt like it was a huge international event. It was because I was standing at the information table, so I got to see a lot of the people. They came up to me, and I just was really impressed with that. It's like that's real America is our family farms.
And you had probably over 1,000 people, it appears.
Oh, yeah. We had over 900 sign the release of liability for the farms, which keeps their insurance rates low. So we did that formally, and I couldn't believe there were over 900 names on that list.
Well, I'm wondering, as you were putting this together, did you find others that were doing something similar around the country, or were you starting with a blank sheet?
There are other really good regional farm tours up in Sonoma County in California. Vermont is amazing. Vermont has bicycle tours to the farms. And for us, it was like you could go wine tasting, but what could you do with your kids? Mm-hmm. So that's why we were looking at those models, but there wasn't anybody doing it around here exactly like this. One model is EcoFarm, which is a conference that happens every winter for the organic community, has a bus tour that's very popular, and it goes to about 4 farms in one day with about 4 giant buses full of people, so that's about 200 people.
I think after this one is over with, and it was, I thought it was very successful, I'm going to share conversations I had now with the farms. I got out to a lot of farms, and we're going to have each of them make a few comments when I'm at the farm, mm-hmm. and it'll be within this podcast.
Yeah.
But what did you take away from the experience this year?
Well, it was interesting how many people had not been on a farm before. I think they just don't have the opportunity. And so to give them that opportunity I was really grateful that, you know, we could do that for people. And then the international aspect was really surprising to me. I heard so many different accents. I started asking people where they were from, and some of them said, yes, you know, I'm from a farm family in Italy or something, or they're in school around here. You know, there's many reasons why people come to the Bay Area, but I felt really good that there's an international warmth towards food and farming that we can all share.
Well, you've done a tremendous job. And if people were going to try to do something similar in their area, what advice do you have to them? If they're listening to this podcast and saying, boy, we need something like that around here. In fact, I'd be glad to try to help organize something like that. What do they do first?
Well, one of the key things, besides getting to know the farmers, and that could take a year, you know, it would really be important to have their trust and have a plan that you work out with them for how to have a greeter at the gate and a table and make it easy for the farmer, and then let them be the expert at each farm. So we had people who take farm fresh food and make it into sandwiches and tacos and things that people can eat. So that was our food vendor group. So they were also entrepreneurs in the community who could display, you know, what we do with all our farm fresh food. So I felt like that was a bonus for the attendees, you know, to be able. So finding a group of vendors who can make some money at this, I think we charged them $50 each or something to be there. It was very nominal, but they, I'm sure, made a lot of money during the day. And so making sure that's there, the music was really important, and it wasn't loud, crazy music, and it doesn't have to be bluegrass music if it's farming. We had jazz in the afternoon, and we had Peruvian panpipes in the morning and singers, and it was really pleasant. And then the beautiful nursery that we were in was just a wonderful atmosphere for people.
And they could top it all off with really great hosts out on the farms. Mm-hmm. That made you feel welcome and answered your questions. Well, congratulations. It was a big success, and
I know you're
getting ready to look for another open farm tour in 2018.
Yeah.
So, Ellen Farmer, thanks for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Sylvia Prevedelli. I'm here in the ranch for the Prevedelli farm. We are here since 1945. I work in the field myself for 46 years. Farming is a wonderful life to live. We do 30, 40 variety of apples. We go 6 variety of pear. We do blackberry, raspberry, green beans, and pumpkin, and squash, and everything what we grow organic. And this is the climate we are in Watsonville, and Coloridas is a climate to grow almost everything. With the farming, when we start years ago, my husband and the family start, and so I start getting involved in farming myself. Never drove a tractor before, so I start working the farm a few hours, and now it is a full time, and I enjoy it. Farming right now, come in, my son-in-law come in. My daughter, Jerry, my son-in-law is Sam, and my son, Nick. My grandson now, he start coming farming too. He's 25 years old, and he really put his heart to in farming.
Well, all those kids must have been doing something else, and it must have been appealing to them to come back to farm, because some of them were doing something else and came back and farmed with you, right?
Yes, my son, he have his own business, and then he come back farming. My daughter is still working for a company here in Watsonville for Superior Food, I'm not saying for 27 years, but they always been working the farming weekend with us. So their art has been always in farming when they were small and growing up. So right now, both my son and my son-in-law, they are a full-time farmer. And my daughter, she's kind of part-time farmer, but she put in all the weekend. We do a lot of farmer market too. We go 12 market a week, more in the Bay Area. We do Santa Cruz and Aptos. Cabrillo College, we've been there, going there for some 30 years there. And people love to see the food we have, what we're growing. We're giving up all the taste, the apple we grow. And I want them to try the different, how we grow in it, and how we, you know, the taste, the flavor.
What do you like best about being a farmer?
To be a farmer, I like it because I enjoy it, first of all. To me, it's not working now. To be a farmer, because I enjoy what we see, what we're growing. Well, the two, I love to eat too. So I'm in the right place. And then I love the farmer market because I love to talk to people. So it's my second family is the farmer market.
And every once in a while you throw a party for others, and I'm over here today, and you're going to give apple crisp and all sorts of things to people that are coming out and visit the farm. That's got to be fun too.
And it was fun to open up a farm, and that was what we do once a year. They come up through the year, but this is a special occasion for the people, and they never been. They are a neighbor, they haven't been here. So I welcome everybody to see what we're growing. I really appreciate it.
Hey, it's a great party you're throwing here, and congratulations, Sylvia Prevedelli.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Molly Baker, and I help run Lonely Mountain Farm. We're a small family farm based out of Coralitos. We specialize in organic heirloom varieties and cut flowers, and we love it. I farm with my husband, and we get to be outside all day with our two small children and grow lots of good food, and the lifestyle is working out really good. We love it.
So I'll tell you a little bit about us. Background on the farm, and then also maybe a little bit more specifically about crops. We'll talk about our apples, some of the issues that we're facing, and why we're still here and why we're still doing what we're doing, right? So my name is Tom Brose. About 22 years ago, we made a leap of faith, my wife and I and our one-year-old son at that time, from San Francisco to Santa Cruz, because I thought I really wanted to give it a try to start a farm. I studied agriculture. I lived in a country that is very agrarian, Ecuador, down in South America. I went to the Peace Corps for 2 years in Samoa, and I have a fellow Peace Corps volunteer here, and I know, also from Samoa. And there, of course, agriculture was still, when I was there, very traditional. But I also observed the impact that conventional, more introduced agriculture systems we're having on this little island environment. And so when I came back to the United States, that's what I was most interested in, is to kind of work on the environmental aspect of farming. And worked for the EPA, and at that time there was a lot of pesticide issues and groundwater contamination issues and food pesticide issues. And organic farming was just in its infancy. in the late 80s, you know, and so I was really curious, and I got so excited about the organic farming movement that I decided to make the jump and enroll in the UCSC Farming Garden Program, which is one of the oldest organic farming programs in the country. Just celebrated its 50th anniversary. Story. At that time, the concept of community-supported agriculture was just being introduced. There was maybe 20 farms in California that were starting with this, but nobody really understood community-supported agriculture farming. As a beginning farmer, I was really interested because the concept behind it is that you have a direct relationship with your customer, with your eater, with your consumer, and they form a mutually beneficial relationship with you, the producer, to share in the risk of growing food. Who thinks it's risky to grow food?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
All right. So we all understand that there's a certain risk. And as a beginning farmer, the risk is even higher, right? So I was not from a farming background. We didn't have land to really, you know, rely on. So it was a really fragile few years. And we jumped into it with really spades and forks and did the Alan Chadwick approach to farming, which is one of our, original probably mentors of the organic farming movement. And he had this concept of French intensive gardening, right? And he did it on a piece of land up in the hillsides of UCSC's campus on a very bare bone, bare stone kind of environment. And he converted it into a lush garden. And I thought, oh, if he can do it, you know, I can grow something on a marginal piece of ground right up here. We live right up on this hillside. And I fell in love with this land, and we were able to, at the time, invest in it. And it was in the right after the earthquake, kind of, and the prices of land were still fairly reasonable. And we started on 2 acres and digging and planted out a 2-acre garden, basically, and had about 30 members in our CSA, and started local farmers markets. And so we got into it, and people were really hungry for organic, the connection to the farmer and the land where the food was being grown. And there was something about that relationship, the community side of things. And I feel like today this farm is probably still where it is because of that connection, that community that supports it. We grew from these 25 members, to almost 900 members in 12 years. So it was just crazy. And you can imagine what it took to kind of make that happen. In those days, we didn't have online internet and everything being paid electronically, and et cetera, et cetera. And so we had to have file maker programs, reprogram to, have 900 accounts, basically, each member sending their checks in, and it was crazy, and that's all we did, really. And we had a waiting list, and we started leasing land, and we grew to about 50, 60 acres of land. And it then changed quickly because CSA concepts were really being copied by a lot of other business models, and mostly by business models that were able to provide a more convenient way of getting organic produce to your doorstep. And we, of course, were based more on about saying, you share in the risk of growing what we do, so you get what we grow. And that's all you do. That's all you got. So if it was an El Nino, rainy season kind of episode, you only got chard and kale and roots, and, you know, it was pretty boring. And you would get the emails, and you would say, when are we going to get tomatoes? In April. It was hard, and we lost membership. And because there was competing programs, especially distribution box schemes that were great, but they were sourcing from all over, and we couldn't keep up with that. We couldn't compete with that. So we had to reinvent ourselves, and it was lucky that the internet and developers, there were some that were really interested in the food system kind of aspect of the internet. And here, lo and behold, we had a person out of Silicon Valley who came up to us and said, I want to use your farm as a way to develop a platform that we can promote the CSA in a way that really works for you, small growers, and we want to go nationwide with that. So we were one of those first farms. And we still have that platform today. It's called Farmigo. And it allowed us to really manage these customers and all these variables to the point where today we have 600 members, and we can customize every box to each member. So each member, we send out a harvest list on Friday of what we have available, and then you can, over the weekend, decide what you want in your box. We have a little web store on the side where we have some add-ons, eggs, bread, honey, jams, a whole bunch of different things, or crops that are not in large quantities, but we have enough of. If you're the first one to see it, you can put it in your box. So we can manage all of this so you can customize, I think, what is a very interesting seasonal kind of fresh box from what we do. And you have the flexibility to be on it for a month. You can get off of it when you want. You can pay by credit card, electronic checks, etc., etc. So, and it's 48 weeks out of the year. We do shut down for the holidays at the end of the year. But the reason why we do a year-round is that we can maintain our workforce, the workers behind this farm, which you don't see today because it's Sunday. But that's the reason why I can stand here today and talk to you about it, is they need to make a livelihood. Most of them live here, but they need to make a livelihood. So we, and then having a year-round CSA, that's where the commitment of the membership really makes a difference. There's some cash flow. There's people that would pay upfront in January for the whole season and give us a $2,000 check. We don't have to run to the bank and, you know, maintain our operation. We have our CSA membership in order to do that, and it's really rewarding. We do go to 6 farmers markets. We do have a route into San Francisco to deliver to retail stores, all the way by right and, you know, Good Eggs and all these different, you know, other operations that honor small-scale growers like ourselves. And then we sell a little bit of wholesale to Coke Farms, which is kind of a food hub here in San Juan Bautista, when we have a lot of apples, a lot of tomatoes, a lot of peppers. They come in very, very handy. What you see here today is land that we moved on to about 13 years ago. It was a moment where we were very fortuitous. We kind of neighbored this piece, and the family here decided to sell. And today we can grow everything on a contiguous piece of land. We don't have to move off-site or lease land. So we have about 50 acres in production, about 25 people working. And yeah, that's what we do.
Dennis Tamura and Blue Heron Farms here in Corralitos. And we have about 18 and a half acres of market garden, I guess you'd call it. And very diversified. Vegetables, cut flowers. We do about 7 farmers markets during the summer, as well as a little bit of wholesale sales and some restaurant sales and some natural food stores sales. Mainly we grow a lot of cool weather things because it's kind of cool where we're growing. Start in April, probably end around Thanksgiving. That's our normal season. And then we give it a rest, and then we start over again.
What do you love about what you're doing?
We started out as gardeners. We like growing plants. Then we tried to figure out, could we make a business out of it? So we struggled with that over the years, but now we're in pretty good shape. Mainly, I think it's... besides the actual growing of plants, watching them grow, we try to really keep an focus on the fact that it's not just a product, that it's food. People eat the food, and hopefully it's good for them, because we try to do as good a job as possible to get it to them in good condition. And the other thing is just the people that we're associated with, the workers in particular, because some of us, or some of them, have been with us for like 15 or 20 years. So, you know, an operation like this, we would not survive if they weren't here. But also just the consumers, you know, because a lot of them have been buyers from us for a long, long time, and we get a lot of good feedback and see their kids grow. So it's a big plus, you know, beyond the money. That's almost not that important most of the time. It's just the whole environment of being able to provide a service, essentially, for the world.
Well, you sound like a happy man.
Pretty. I'm tired, but I'm pretty pleased, yeah, the way things worked out.
I'm Delmar McComb. It's Blossoms Farm. My partner Karen Fortin and I own and operate Blossoms. We grow about 75 to 100 types of medicinal and culinary herbs that we blend into products for health and beauty and vitality. So anything from skincare to digestive bitters to salves for the skin to lotions for the skin, stuff like that. So it's a very unique business model because we do everything from the seed to the bottle, as we call it, seed to bottle.
How do you sell it?
We sell at three different farmers markets in Santa Cruz, the downtown, the Live Oak, and the West Side. We also have a web store, and we also have something called a CSH, a community-supported herbalism program. So people who sign up get quarterly shares of our products that they get to pick from a whole list, and it's a good way to support our farm, and then we give direct help to people.
What do you love about farming?
I love with my hands in the earth. I think it's the best therapy there is, especially in our crazy world. If I'm feeling a bit hopeless sometimes, it just pulling a few weeds and getting connected to the earth is a beautiful way to have great, I don't know, therapy. So that's one of the best things for me.
My name is Rebecca Herzog. We are Stone Meal Farm. It is me and my husband, Thomas Herzog. We've been doing this for 4 years. We are now located on 1 acre in Corralitos. Brand new location. We sell directly through the Santa Cruz Farmers Markets, and we practice a method called natural process farming.
What does that mean?
That means that we use no herbicides, no pesticides, and we try and do something different where instead of eliminating all weeds and coming with the standpoint that you're always fighting against nature, we're trying to figure out how nature works in its patterns and how to integrate farming into a process without disturbing how it's naturally functioning.
So a lot of your fields are going to look like they've got weeds in them then.
They do. It looks a lot sloppier than everyone would like to see. It's very hard not to want to make everything nice and clean and tidy, but nature likes everyone involved in the party, not just a select group. So,
just to qualify, no herbicides. So there are certain herbicides that are approved for certified organic use. So you don't even use those?
No, we don't. There are, yes, conventional products that you can use, and there are actual derived from organic sources that are certified to be used with an organic cert, but we don't even use those. We completely limit ourselves. The only thing we put on our fields is compost tea, and then we add to remineralize oyster shell and a volcanic rock dust. It's more powderized than a rock, but it's a very fine ground volcanic rock dust.
So you've been educating your customers about this. Does that include some restaurants too, or primarily just people that are coming and buying your product or buying from a farmer's market?
Right now, we've just been through the farmer's markets. We're at Scotts Valley and Felton Farmer's Market. But coming this spring, we are looking to expand. So we will be starting to branch out through grocery stores and hopefully some chefs, because we have some great restaurants and we'd like to kind of support that, the growth.
I mean, what is it you like about farming?
It's just you grow up and you're always looking for new things to be passionate about, and you stumble into farming and it's just a bottomless well of fun things to learn about and explore. It's literally a whole world under the soil that you didn't even know existed. So to me, it's just this unlimited potential to stay engaged and like in awe with the world.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.